spectrum, but quietly. You know, actually, both the Democratic and Republican platforms in 2016 advocate increasing worker ownership. Now, in the last couple of years, Democrats have been recognizing that this might be an issue that they want to take leadership on. Just a couple weeks ago, the Main Street Employee Ownership Act passed, which facilitates worker ownership and conversions of businesses. So I think, actually, we have an interesting opportunity in this moment of incredible polarization, and there's a political base already starting to form. We just need to strengthen that. And make the demand even louder, make the demand heard that that system that created the crash 10 years ago is not acceptable anymore.
What's the difference between the gig economy and the rigged economy?
Well, I think a rigged economy, right, is one in which the accountability goes upward. You know, in which you have businesses that are ultimately accountable just to a small segment of their shareholders, of big investors. They're not, when they have to make hard decisions, their accountability goes upward. And the people who are, say, on the line for their mortgages are the ones who get let off. You know, the gig economy is, in a sense, an opportunity and a danger. The gig economy is a danger in the sense that it means, it has often meant relinquishing things that workers have fought for decades, for centuries. But it also invites these opportunities of more flexible work. And we have an opportunity to create a future of work that in which workers are really in control.
And finally, the fact that who was held accountable for what happened and how much so many people lost 10 years ago?
Well, I think we haven't really held anyone accountable nearly enough. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, or there was some talk for some of the time about who was not put in jail, things like that. I think we need to talk about the system. We need to transform the system, and we have a tool set. We have a tradition that is proven, that is actually bipartisan, that we can turn to to make that difference.
Nathan Schneider, media studies professor at University of Colorado Boulder. His new book, Everything for Everyone, The Radical Tradition That's Shaping the Next Economy. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
In November, you still have time to register if you're a New York resident. Election Day is the first Tuesday in November. You still have time to register if you're a New York resident. The deadline is October 12th. If you're a college student, you can use your campus address. It's easy.
To register to vote online or to make sure you're still registered, just visit www.vote.org. Remember, the deadline is October 12th, and your vote counts.
Vote for me, vote for me. I'm the one you can trust, you'll see. Play your part in democracy. It's election time again.
Allegations that Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when they were both in high school.
Unsafe sex when you carry a condom. One third of condom buyers are women. Join them. Don't rely on the guy. You be the influence. Buy, carry, demand condoms. Go to youbetheinfluence.org. A project of the American Sexual Health Association.
To be a mentor, you don't have to be a super athlete, which is why we're not leaving this basketball court until mentor Dan Donovan hits a foul shot. Fire away, Dan!
All right.
Oh, so close! Okay, not so close. Not a ball player, are you, Dan?
Well, me, I like to bowl.
Okay, while we've got time, let me remind you that to mentor a child, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to call Save the Children toll-free at 1-877-BA-MENTOR.
A message brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Yes, and we're going to try to save the children over the next hour or so by enlightening them with facts and fun. It's WUSB, Stony Brook. It's Off the Wall time here on a Tuesday evening. Well, it's another exciting edition of Off the Wall here on WUSB. Manuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
I'm joining you, yeah.
And good thing we got out of the weather there. Boy, it's a little bit of Florence out there.
A little, yeah. It's palpable.
She's a tropical depression now. That's all. That's all she is. Tropical depression. It's still enough
Poor thing.
Flood our roads and inconvenience our lives. And I think it's outrageous.
Well, it's a natural part of living on Earth.
It's becoming more of a natural part of living on Earth because you have the storm of the centuries every couple of years now. Did you hear it in North Carolina when this it was a hurricane before and it was slamming into Wilmington and various other places? They were saying these were 1,000-year rains, meaning they have not had rains like that since the National Weather Service started keeping records in 1018, whatever. But 1,000 years ago, who was around? Native Americans, I guess, would be the ones to back that story up. But yeah, that's how they view these storms. Every single storm is oh my God, it's Armageddon. And I guess it's just to get us used to Armageddon because, you know, all the climate change that's going on now, there's just more horrific weather events. You took a look at the oceans last week, and there were like 8 different storms going in the Atlantic and the Pacific. And that's just, you know, it's kind of unheard of. And that you have the extreme heat and various other things that have been going on over the past few years, a couple of decades. It's, it makes you wonder. Makes us wonder. It doesn't make everybody wonder. Some people just think we can carry on blithely as we always do and assume this Earth won't just spit us out when it's done with us.
Yeah, I mean, it could at any moment. I think the patterns are just a little bit more extreme. Yeah, just exaggerated. Hotter temperatures. The intensity, I think, of the storms, and that's where a lot of these warnings and things come in, and you know, people trying to get inland. That's the theme, really,
right.
Is getting above the sort of sea level, and floodplain areas. But it's
and here we are on an island, you know. So when you have to get inland, and you live on an island, that's a little bit. A bald hill can only hold so many people, you know.
It's amazing how little it takes with that level to do this sort of like wide damage across a huge. In this case, it was the coast, but in the Carolinas, but the shoreline, that just incremental creep of flood or a surge, even of maybe several inches or feet, even that could. Just be dramatic. It's amazing. It's just the power. It can break over lamp posts and just completely disintegrate overpasses and crossings that, you know, for as long as anyone remembered, you know, just were something over the river. You know, the river then sort of supersedes it, or you know, rises and completely submerges these overpasses. These scenarios are playing out in our country. What struck me is I saw some news about the coordination with the military and so on, and the different agencies and ways FEMA is structured, and they're sort of the last line of defense for like high water vehicles and swift water rescues and stuff like that. And it's amazing how much we're using that here.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of these like adventurisms and crusading things, we're having to spend the money ostensibly from the military budget.
This sounds like an argument for more storms.
No. I just think it's funny that, you know, we spend so much money for defense and it ends up being something that we're defending. Not against other nations, but against nature.
Oh, Mother Nature. She's on the axis of evil now, and we have to. Yeah, if we pipe our defense dollars into fighting Mother Nature, I'm kind of torn because I don't want to fight Mother Nature. You always lose, but it's better than fighting some country someplace where you don't really have a beef. you know, and maybe we can actually learn something in the process. Although, you know, we really have to learn how to get along with Mother Nature and not be victims of our own stupidity. And I don't know how this is going to turn out. And I like storms too. I'm torn because I really do like storms. But, you know, I don't want to see people losing everything every couple of years. It just seems like that's happening a lot more. And especially in the case of Puerto Rico, my God, what happened there? What's still happening there? There are just no words. You know, we're still getting over Sandy. What was that, 2012 here in New York? And you know, compared to what happened in Puerto Rico recently, it's nothing. Compared to Katrina, it's nothing. But
think about the costs even for that, like with Sandy and just bridges or tunnels and mass transit alone. Those costs could have been invested in infrastructure beforehand, mm-hmm. but just as remediation and emergency funding goes, it just gets astronomical from a cleanup perspective. And our city planning and stuff like that was never really taking into consideration the actions of those that are kind of allowing this much carbon in the atmosphere and denying it at the same time, denying the impact on the hydrologic cycle, on our habitats, the ocean conveyor system. There's just so much science and if you really learn about what's going on, the Larsen C ice shelf breaking off and then all of those different impacts on the salination and it's fascinating and it's all ongoing and we're sort of in the front lines, many people, the poorest of people and average everyday people are at the effect of this we'll see. You know, maybe it will be a positive thing, kind of a wake up, a shot in the arm to design better cities and really do comprehensive planning instead of sort of emergency preparedness.
Dude, how many wake up calls is it going to take for you to stand up and catch that damn bus already? You know, it's just we are getting so many chances.
We need to sink a lot of carbon.
Yeah, we need to sink a lot of people, I think, because. Boy, we are going to hell in a handbasket, and it's got to stop. It's got to change. Things have got to get better. I see signs. I always see signs that things are getting better. That there's hope, and talking to young people, for instance, that always gives me hope because as long as you're not at a Trump rally, they're going to say insightful things and not just parrot what they're being told. Not just people who reflect what their parents say, but people who actually are thinking for themselves and seeing the effects of what is going on today on society, on our position in the world, on just the overall feeling that's going on around us every single day. And, you know, I think kids are the first ones to realize that's not healthy. That's not something that you want to perpetuate for the rest of your life. And we need to change that somehow. So I'm really hoping, you know, we were in despair 2 years ago. But now we're almost at that stage where we get to make another decision. And if that decision goes well, not just go well, but go strongly well, I think that's the shot in the arm we need. And maybe, just maybe, having that shot in the arm at this particular point would be even better than having won the first time, because now we know what not to do, and we know it with passion, and we know we're never going to make that mistake again. We're never going to go down that road again, and we're going to fight back. We're going to fight back strong, and we're not going to compromise and be nice guys. We're going to fight the fight like it deserves to be won. Maybe, you know, maybe that's what we got out of these 2 years. I'm hoping, because I know if it goes the other way, I don't see much hope in the future. I don't see us recovering. You know, I don't believe that's realistic. I think there are more of us than there are of them. You know, us being people that believe in sharing, in opening up our prosperity to people less fortunate, in healthcare, building up infrastructure, in not invading countries and dropping bombs and sending drones everywhere, you know, a better world, something that we can take pride in. those are the values I hope will be emphasized and emphasized strongly, not just this year, but in the years ahead.
Yeah,
I'm hopeful.
Get back to work on a lot of the things that haven't been addressed and are urgent and pressing.
Well, you mentioned the trains, I think, high-speed rail or infrastructure or something. It made me think about high-speed rail and how we're sinking all this money into recovery all the time.
Yeah.
And rebuilding things. But how about building things? I was looking at a video on YouTube about Japan's train system in the 1960s, 1964. They were going faster in 1964 than any train that we have in this country today. Think about that. That's over 50 years ago, and they've been faster than us ever since. And they've got a tiny country compared to our country. We have a lot more space to get around, and so a lot more of a need to go fast. And not to be crude here, but they got nuked 20 years before that, and yet somehow they were able to build high speed rail and really embrace this technology. And we're still arguing about it. We're still arguing about are trains even a good idea? it can be depressing sometimes.
Yeah. I think it points out a dichotomy too, in like you have the ownership class or super elites or whatever you want to call them, and everybody else. And it reminds me of like products that are for specific countries, because Japan had a strategic alliance after that with the U.S. So it's not like we weren't aware of their capabilities and what was emerging with their economy and stuff. It's just that it was decided that we don't get those sorts of things here either, because we're too big or too this or too that. And hadn't made it a national priority. We spent on other things.
And what are those other things exactly? Because I'm not really seeing a lot of it.
Greed.
Okay, yeah, greed's expensive. Well, like I said, there's hope. We can always change. We can always get better. And the more we talk to people, the more we compare how we're doing with how the rest of the world is doing, if we're open-minded, the more we learn. Yeah. And from that, we might get somewhere.
Yeah. So, but it's people have to understand it's in everyone's interest, and more so the majority of the folks that, don't have jets and chauffeurs and stuff like that. They're the ones that that need transportation. They need things to live their lives and have a certain quality of life that I think we deserve, we really, really beat the drum of being the best country ever and the most advanced nation. All that, great. Back that up with something, though. Back it up with something.
Yeah, if you have to keep saying it all the time, that's not a good thing.
Exactly. Starts ringing a little hollow.
And think how it looks to the rest of the world to always hear someone saying how great they are. And actually, it's kind of like the embodiment of Trump. Here's a guy that keeps saying how great he is and doesn't really back it up with anything other than to repeat it over and over again. We don't want to be like that. We don't want to be the just chanting USA everywhere we go and, strong-arming people into agreeing with us. We are better than that. And, knowing the people in this country, we know that we're capable of so much more. And it always is a great thing to see people overcoming obstacles, fighting back for their rights, and winning, it brings to mind, we're in the midst of these Supreme Court hearings, since last week it's kind of gone to hell. The allegations now against Kavanaugh from this woman from the 1980s, what happened at a high school house party. Wow. I couldn't have predicted this. I don't know why I couldn't have, because these days, almost anything is possible. But what do you think of this, Kyle? What do you think of this whole controversy?
Oh man, I don't know how I can comment on this without clumsily addressing my feelings.
You've already said you're going to be clumsily doing it, so you can be clumsy now. Go ahead, enjoy.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think that. That this is important, that as has been said and been reiterated, this person's story deserves to be aired, and it seems like they're going to have some hearings or some discussions about it in a week's time, I think, Monday.
Yeah.
And quite serious to discuss specifically this and I think even hear from this person personally. So, I just think specifically with the allegations, I could speak about that a little bit. I think assault and consent and basically dominance in general, there's a lot there, and this came out at all, like, speaks a lot to his character, and could really damage his the way he's seen, you know, sort of as this goes. And there's this historical thing with Clarence Thomas that sort of parallels this and is very interesting too. I also believe that people live lives, you know, and things can be messy, he may not remember this either conveniently or innocently, but he may have been a jerk back then. So I think that's really valid. But I also want to not forget, and I mentioned this to you just from thinking about it, is that there are a lot of other things. You know, we can focus on this, and it is important and a concern. But I still want to know about the other things that some of the senators were commenting on as far as his writings during the Bush years, and in particular in relation to the USA Freedom Act and the Patriot Act, which the Freedom Act is up to be renewed in 2019. So anyway, I have a lot of different feelings about this, and I could elaborate.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
Well, I've been following it with great interest. It's interesting the things you were saying about maybe people were jerks, you know, back in high school, whatever. I don't know who said this. I just saw, you know, passing by Fox News last night, there was the caption that basically said, someone commits sexual assault as a teenager, should we be denied opportunities for the remainder of our lives? And my answer to that question is yes, especially if it's being a Supreme Court justice. But the phrasing of that, and I might not have the phrasing entirely correct, but I have the gist of it. You notice how quickly they went into the we part of that. They're identifying with the perpetrator. They're saying, should we be denied? I don't know if they realized how bad that makes them seem, but that is just so typical Fox News. Yeah, side with the accused rather than the victim. Here's a question. Why did she wait until now to make this accusation? I mean, it seems a little bit, she's taking advantage of the situation, just trying to get some headlines there, you know. Why wouldn't she bring this up in the past? Why wait until now, you know? Talk about derailing something. Well, I'm going to answer my own question, Kyle. Thank you very much. In 2012, she did. So there, you're wrong. She did reveal this to a therapist, to a husband. The fact is, when the guy was nominated for a Supreme Court justice, that is when it became of interest to the rest of the country, rest of the world. So this is not an instance of somebody coming up the last minute trying to get attention for herself. This is something that was mentioned. If she made it up, she's playing the long game. She's got this going since 2012. There's so many reasons why I don't doubt her story. First of all, why would anybody put themselves through something like this? Second of all, think about what she would have had to have done in order to put herself in a house with where this guy would be, same school district. So it would have to be somebody who already went to the same school. She would have had to have planned that out in advance. Or if you believe the other conspiracy theories, Democratic operatives are reaching out to people trying to find somebody willing to stand up against this guy and accuse him of all kinds of things and hope that the first person they ask is the person that says yes, and that if they asked other people and they said no, that nobody will ever say anything to anybody about how they were approached. All right, so you have this successful professor out in California that is basically putting herself on the line in what I consider to be a very patriotic move to try and save this country from trusting somebody who has demonstrated that he is not trustworthy. Now, if she had made the story up, think about it. There's another guy in the room. That's the story. This judge guy, not a real judge. That's kind of ironic. Kavanaugh's the real judge. This other guy is named Judge, but he's the one in the room at the same time this is happening. Now, if she's making up the story, why would you put somebody else in the room? You'd say this happened when nobody else was around. Instead, she says, yes, this happened when this guy was there. This guy's still alive, so he can refute it, and he is refuting it. But interestingly enough, for some reason, this guy has written books about how he used to get blackout drunk when he was a teenager. So doesn't look very good for him. So, yeah, the story so far seems to stand up pretty well. And under testimony, which is probably one of the scariest things that you ever have to look forward to, being grilled by a bunch of senators about what happened to you in high school when you were a victim of something, that is what this woman is considering doing. And it's you know, mind-boggling how people can treat that as something that might not have even happened.
Yeah, I think it just seems like the timing is abrupt, and we're caught off guard because of the hush that's been around this, just how hard the Republicans have been trying to keep a lot of this under wraps. I didn't know a lot of the backstory. I just to be clear, I haven't looked into this much more than what I've been hearing and seeing on TV. I did watch comments on Washington Journal again, uh-huh. And there's a lot of forgiveness. A lot of women really sticking up for him, which I thought was a little off. Yeah, just like the kind of you know, well, if this is the standard, you know, I think any, you know, this is what teenage boys do, you know, that kind of tenor. And to some degree, I mean, it's a little too sympathetic. Well, to a huge degree, it's a little too sympathetic, I think. But
well, you know what teenage girls do? They remember, okay, and they tell the story. That's what they do. So that would be my response if I was hosting Washington Journal.
Yeah, yeah. But it was an odd discussion, I think, just in the context of such a serious position to have to go so far back. But I think it's mostly the seal of just not having a lot of the information about him come out, and this may have been some of the stuff that was being kept under wraps or whatever, or kept in closed sessions, and what the Democrats did is basically make it public because it wasn't allowed or there was an opportunity in the public hearings to actually raise this because it wasn't known.
There are some questions about that, and legitimate questions too. Dianne Feinstein knew about this in July and didn't make it public until just now. That's a good question. That needs to be answered. That's not on the victim, the alleged victim. That is on Dianne Feinstein to answer that question. And we don't know what she was going through as far as talking to the victim, trying to get her to come forward, trying to make the story official. Even Democrats were pressuring her to release this information. So, you know, we need to find out what that was all about. But that should not in any way affect what the victim is saying. And, you know, when I say victim, again, alleged victim, what have you, I am 100% convinced that she believes what she's saying. She's already passed a lie detector test, which apparently you can't. I didn't know you couldn't admit lie detector test results in court.
No.
Why even have lie detectors? I mean,
it's not a part of I think logic of legal process and so on. It's sort of like you wouldn't just apply a calculation to something legally. You have to actually hear the whole case. So testimony from a polygraph, you're basically offloading all of the sort of evaluation and stuff that comes up in a trial. You're just trusting that into a gizmo.
But if it's relevant for other things, why isn't it relevant there? You know, it can decide whether or not you get a job. If you know, you're Cops use it, you know, to decide if they're going to charge somebody, don't they?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I always thought they were taken more seriously. But whatever, she allegedly passed that. Well, she did pass that.
There could be the specter of it could also be this like presumed guilt. Mm-hmm. Whereas with if you're applying for a federal agency, it's like, well, yeah, they probably say, you know, that, you know, anybody is suspect coming into their agency or in a police department or something. Whereas, you know, if you're supposed to be innocent, submitting you to a lie detector test is sort of presuming that you're not telling the truth and they're going to catch you. Uh-huh. And it's how you use it too, I think. But I don't know. I'm not an expert. That's a totally different subject. But I
do believe she believes her story. She believes it 100% that that's what happened to her.
Yeah, if it's what occurred, and then he's clearly covering it up or conveniently misremembering anything about it. It's an indication of character, and it's probably going to be hugely disruptive to his confirmation if it's aired and actually taken seriously, as I think it will be in the next week.
Well, I mean, the difference between this and the Anita Hill hearings with Clarence Thomas, demographics have changed quite a bit. The makeup of the Senate, I believe she was testifying in front of all white males, all elderly white males, you know, an African-American woman. It's not like that anymore. There are women in the Senate, and the composition of the country has changed. The attitude of the country has changed. And these are the kinds of things that give me hope, because I think, you know, she will be heard even by the Republicans, which, you know, that's a good thing. And the country will listen more than they did back in the 90s when the Clarence Thomas hearing took place. So, yeah, it's indication of changing times. But I think in this particular case, all it will take really is just one more person coming forward saying, yeah, he was at that party. Of course, it's hard to remember, a party over 30 years ago. But, you know, one person saying this is the kind of thing that he would do, or he would hang out with this person, or just anything that would back this other person up a little bit. I think that would be the nail in the coffin for this, because
I think
if it gets much worse, I don't think there's hope for this this nomination.
Yeah, and I mean, I think everybody thinks, you know, they would like to be better in relationships and probably made many mistakes in high school. But I know a lot of people, you know, experimenting or at parties, then, you know, make mistakes, but they generally, you know, being impaired is a window. Your inhibitions are lessened and so on. And, you know, it's a window into who you are. And I think that you know, there's a line that crosses. There's plenty of people that, you know, got near blackout drunk and weren't, you know, doing that kind of thing to women or other individuals. Yeah,
but they wouldn't know they're blackout drunk, right?
Well,
they
don't I said near blackout drunk.
Okay.
I meant near black. I mean, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, plenty of people partied.
I don't know what blackout drunk really is. How does that work? You black out, but do you still function, or you just pass out?
That's a whole radio conversation.
If you've been blackout drunk, please let us know. We're ignorant on the subject.
Please don't tell us. No, don't drink. Don't drink. Don't drink a lot.
Don't black out. Well, you can't tell people not to black out. It's something that just happens.
We're going to have to record like 10 more PSAs after this show.
Did you hear the PSA before the show? Oh, wow. Listen, we put this together to get people to register. And I thought the voices sounded rather familiar.
Election Day is the first Tuesday in November. You still have time to register if you're a New York resident. The deadline is October 12th. If you're a college student, you can use your campus address. It's easy.
To register to vote online or to make sure you're still registered, just visit www.vote.org. Remember, the deadline is October 12th, and your vote counts.
Vote for me, vote for me. I'm the one you can trust, you'll see. Play your part in democracy. It's election time again.
Wow, that is something. That is informative. You know, go to vote.org. It is so easy. It is just basically input information, and you can find out if you're registered, and if you're not registered, you can register. And the amazing thing is, if you live on campus, you can register and vote on campus. You don't have to change your driver's license address. You don't have to do anything like that. If you live on campus, like a campus like Stony Brook, you can vote at a campus like Stony Brook. And seeing as how there are tens of thousands of people here on this campus, you know, you're a very big part of the community. You should have a say. So take it seriously. www.vote.org. October 12th. That's the deadline for registration. Of course, the election, first Tuesday in November. Boy, I hope things change. I really do.
Yeah.
Well, what else has been going on? Say more positive things, but more exciting things, certainly. All the gas explosions in Boston. My God, you're reading these headlines, you know, you wonder why this hasn't gotten more attention. 70 locations were affected, 80 homes destroyed. Houses were exploding in Boston last week because of a gas company that had pressure, I think, 12 times what was normal. The Columbia Gas System should have had pressure of about 0.5 pounds per square inch, but readings in the area reached at least 6 PSI, 12 times higher than what the system was intended to hold. So what that means is that if you have natural gas going to your home, your house might... It's not funny. But just imagine the horror of having something suddenly explode and then running outside and more houses are exploding. You know, that's as bad as any terrorist act, yet it's something we're able to pull off all by ourselves through incompetence and through not keeping our infrastructure in decent shape. And I was just surprised. I know the hurricane was hitting, and I know that the Kavanaugh hearings were happening, but I was just surprised at how little attention this story was getting. We were driving around listening, and CNN was on, and they just kept saying, yeah, coming up, we're going to have an update on the 60 homes blowing up in Boston. But first, we're going to have another interview about this particular hurricane or about the hearings. And they never got to the story. And I'm like, you know, 60 homes blowing up. That's a pretty good story. You got to really focus on what in God's name is going on. Did we even know that was a possibility? And who are all these people that have been made homeless and have all their possessions destroyed? That, you know, it matters. And I just think that story really didn't get the attention it deserved.
No, I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about high school.
Get out of the high school years. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
It's just so much. I think I need a therapist or something. Like,
well,
I think everybody's traumatized by high school. But
I'll tell you, high school was not... I'll tell you what the hell was. The hell was junior high school. Did you have junior high school? Did you have middle school? What did you have?
I had middle school. Okay. No, I had both.
You can't have both. Junior high school is 7 through 9, and our high school is 10 through 12. But middle school, I think, is what, 8? Oh, you know what? Now I don't even know. I just know we never had middle school. But junior high school was hell for me. But it changed in high school. High school, around here, the two junior high schools merge. You have Murphy, you have Julinas. And when you go to high school, the students from Julinas and Murphy all wind up in Ward Melville. And that's... You know, where all of a sudden the school population is double and people were more mature. And I felt a lot better there. Maybe I wouldn't have if junior high school wasn't such hell. But the thing is, you know, there are jerks in public schools and private schools. They're jerks as kids. They do bad things. And I guess, you know, the message here is that if you're a jerk, if you victimize people, then, you can redeem yourself. You can improve over the years ahead. But maybe don't try and become a Supreme Court justice. You know, maybe that's something that you gave up when you were a jerk. I don't like to condemn people for the rest of their lives, but there are certain standards for certain positions.
Yeah. I wish I was a better person, and I think a lot of people feel that way, too. And also, but also, I wish I was better... because of what I, you know, there's like gossip and rumors and all of that. So you don't really know what's going on, but I'm sure there were bigger jerks, you know, in my school. And I'm sure because I heard a lot, you know, again, you have to think of like the entire context of whatever high school and social life was, you know, at play there. It just can be really toxic. And
yeah, but there are levels of jerkness. You know, there are the people who instigate, and there are the people who follow.
That's kind of what I'm feeling. Like I just feel like for all my own foibles and clumsiness or just irreverence or whatever, you know, I feel like, you know, I was as good as I could have been, you know, and I think a lot of, you know, and a lot of people just learn and do better by other individuals and become better at, you know, interpersonal relationships. And
yeah, could you have done more? Could you have done better? Absolutely. Everybody can say yes to that. But did you? I can't see you being a bully. I cannot see that. And
I wasn't, you know, cornering people at house parties. I
can't imagine that. But when the election was in full swing, I remember saying on these airwaves that Trump and Christie, those were the bullies in school. Those guys were the bullies that I was always being, you know, infested with. And you can tell it doesn't go away in many people. They carry that with them for the rest of their lives. You know, Trump, you know, Chris Christie was not a victim in junior high school or high school. They were the perpetrators. It's not hard to imagine that. And I think, you know, instinct takes over. You can tell a good person from a bad person pretty much just how you interact with them.
I think anybody I interacted with, I could probably still talk to. And that's something I've always thought. Wow. I've always been, you know, even, and I think funny things too. Like I remember a lot of, I mean, I can't even say things that, you know, women have said to me and guys, and you know, I just think about a lot of the funny circumstances when you're growing up like that, and you know how what people's comfort level and how that's changing too now. I mean, with these kinds of movements and you know, really discussing respect in the workplace and these institutions that are catching up, because I think a lot of millennials and so on, like people that grew up with multicultural educations and that kind of thing, they have these sort of expectations that, oh well, I learned this on the way up, and so when I get into this institution, it's just going to be like this. Nobody's going to, like, you know, pounce on me and abuse me or something like that. And that's just not the case in the real world. That's part of getting out of that safety bubble of new adulthood or young adulthood to new adulthood.
Right.
But at the same time, the institutions do need to change. We all should have expectations. And I think that this year's been like a fissure. It's been like a crack in seeing the logical extent of allowing that to be like perverted, literally, from a leadership perspective.
I like that this is forcing us to look at ourselves and look at our history and see, you know, what we have done in the past and how that's affected who we are now. Could we have done better? Can we do better now? These are questions we should always constantly be asking ourselves, not to the point of obsession, but, you know, at least not covering things up or pretending we're people that we're not. We have to look at the blemishes as well as the good parts, and we all have them. We all do.
Yeah. I just think, and there's just different ways we're socialized and conditioned, and we need to challenge those things. And like, I had a funny instance at a party once. A girl said to me, said to be more aggressive.
Like, she said to be more aggressive.
Yeah,
to like, what, anybody or just
generally? Okay. And like that was what was normal. That aggressive guys are the norm, or something like that. I didn't get it. But in what world is she in where that is what is acceptable?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, there's all ways of taking that.
You know. Like, it, and coming from an era like the Anita Hill stuff was going on in the 90s and so on and so forth, you know, like we were all aware of like sexual harassment in the workplace. I mean, it was beginning to be a word or a phrase.
But people didn't take it seriously. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to confront it. They saw the people that made accusations as being pains in the ass. That's where we've grown up. That's where things have gotten a lot better for people who have to, you know, get something off their chest holding people accountable who deserve to be held accountable. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's interesting how identity and some of that stuff changes, though, and how you grow around it, and mm-hmm. you have different experiences and just realize in hindsight that, you know, you're doing the, you've done the best you could, and you grow, and as I look back, I think a lot of people can say, you know, they did the best they could and want to be like, you know, a better person, in their community. And I don't know.
Well, as Kyle meditates and thinks about things in the past and how it could have gone better, I think we should all take a moment and reflect on our lives and the people around us and where we are heading, what kinds of people we are, how much better we can be, how the people around us can be better to us and to themselves. Yep. And if you want to join the conversation, by all means, don't be afraid. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. We'd be happy to talk to you on the air.
Be more gentle. Be nice to people.
Yeah.
Be kind. You know, we were talking, we pulled off, and someone stopped and wanted to help us.
That's true. That's true.
And it was just out of nowhere. It was like, no, we were, you know...
Well, we were lost. We needed to find where we were going. We pulled over just for a second, and inside of 5 seconds, someone's pulling over to see if they can help us.
We hadn't even... I think you barely put on the flashers.
And two
the
guy, flashes. I got two flashes out before the guy pulled over.
He's like, hey, you guys all right? Everything okay? It's like, we just stopped.
Yeah, and the guy had Trump stickers, so, you know, it happens, and I've always been the first to say people are nice no matter what they vote for.
I didn't want to make it a political
thing. It's not a political thing. That's got nothing to do with it. I wish people on our side and on other sides would get that and realize that we are, you know, many of the things we want are the same things. In fact, this is something I brought up in dealing with North Korea since I've been over there and I've talked to North Koreans. And I, you know, this is the one thing I say Trump is able to do to a degree because he's able to make things simple and just talk to somebody. And in this particular case, you see how readily North Korea responds to just communication. And that's something that somebody who knows a lot about politics will not do because they know how the game is played. And this is pretty much where Donald Trump's skill ends. He doesn't know what to do past that point. But maybe the rest of us can learn something from that, yeah, just opening up the communication channels is often a good thing to do. Even if you think the person you're speaking to has absolutely nothing in common with you, you'll be surprised many, many times. And that is how you get somewhere. That is how you have a chance of actually having a good conversation and maybe steering somebody in a better direction, or maybe you find you're going in a bad direction and you get steered into a better one yourself. But communication, you can never stop doing that because, you know, there's no hope after that. There really isn't. All right, we have a phone call coming in, so let's see who is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi, how are you doing? I just wanted to bring to the caller's attention, like, the importance when you mentioned that the Kavanaugh accuser passed a polygraph.
Okay.
So, for those of you that aren't familiar with getting a polygraph, these are not comfortable experiences. They take about an average of about 4 hours, and the person that's getting the subject, they're rendered immobile for during this period of time. And the polygrapher, when they question this person, they only ask yes or no questions. And the first thing that they do is that they're going to establish a baseline, and they're going to ask this person a series of questions where they know the person's telling the truth. And then the polygrapher will do something, say, count from 1 to 10, and say, write a number, letter 4. And then count from 1 to 10 asking what number do they see in front of them, and they direct the subject to lie to them. And once that subject lies to them, they have a baseline. And during this time, this is hours, this is when the people are establishing that the baseline of when the person is telling the truth and when they're being false. And so when you have the result of a polygraph, they're either going to pass, they're going to fail, or they're going to be inconclusive. And the reason why they're not accepted in court is because they only detect, they only are good for detecting when a person is telling the truth, not when they're lying, because they could be stressed, they could be traumatized. Some people just cannot pass a polygraph.
Okay.
So I think it's important to highlight that if you have an accuser that after 30 years can pass a polygraph, that means they're being asked yes or no in a series of questions. Were they in the room with Kavanaugh? Were they in intimate contact with Kavanaugh? Was there another person? And they're only yes or no. It's very black and white that they can pass. Clearly highlights that this accuser is very credible.
Interesting.
I just wanted to share that.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that expertise. That really makes it a lot clearer to me.
Yeah, thanks for that explanation. I was trying to get at that, but I didn't know exactly the nuances of it. But that is a really good explanation. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for your call. Take care. I don't think I've ever actually said the word polygrapher before, and now I've said it. I don't think I've ever used that word. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for that call, and thank you all USB listeners for your expertise, because you all have so much to contribute and shed knowledge on things that we don't know much about. Our number is 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. I've never taken a lie detector test. I tried to once. I almost did. But it got canceled. I wasn't able to do it. And you can't really just volunteer to take a lie detector test for it's not like a video arcade game. I wish it were. I'd have fun with that. But have you ever taken one, Kyle?
No.
You're under oath. You know that.
No.
I've been under oath. Okay, I've been under oath, but not a lie detector test. I've never taken a drug test either, for that matter. Wow. I'm missing out. I'm missing out on our culture.
I've taken drug tests.
Uh-huh. Yeah?
I passed all of them.
Yep, you got drugs. You got all the drugs.
Passed all my drug tests.
Oh, yes, America. Wow. Oh, in local news, a Huntington man was arrested today after he threatened to shoot an 11-year-old boy after losing to him in the video game Fortnite. This is not funny.
Wait,
there's nothing funny. Look at the expression on this guy's face. It's like they caught him in headlights. Go to today's Newsday and you'll see this.
They have little fingers. They have their dexterity, reaction time.
If you are going to be in a lineup, this is the face you need to make when you're in a lineup. Eyes wide open, downturned face.
Yeah.
Just suddenly realizing, my God, what have I done?
You got beat by a kid.
Well, it wasn't that, I don't think. I'm just being arrested. What? I don't even know what Fortnite is.
It's a video game.
Fortnite, by the way, for those of you interested in Stony Brook, used to be a magazine. Oh, yes. Yeah. So we used to have a feature magazine here on campus, glossy cover and everything. Fortnite. I think it came out every 2 weeks, which is what Fortnite means. And they spell night right, unlike the game, which doesn't spell night right.
I think it's a massive multiplayer reality game, kind of like Warcraft, but, I'm dating myself by mentioning that.
Well, anyway, this guy threatened on Monday night to come to the boy's home and cause him pain. You think that's funny?
I think everything is funny.
11-year-old kid listening to us now, yes. Hearing us laugh at some 45-year-old guy threatening to come to his school in Kings Park. Wow. Well, the chief of police in Suffolk County would disagree with you, Kyle. He said, I find this to be a very troubling thing. It's kind of shocking to me. Well, you know, Stuart Cameron, chief of police in Suffolk County, I am not shocked by anything anymore. But they had an increased police presence at the RJO Intermediate School in Kings Park. Okay, wait. What's an intermediate school? Is that a middle school? Is that the same thing?
Yes.
I would not do well in school. I don't even understand the names of the schools anymore. And so, yeah, they had a police presence. I don't know if that was after they arrested the guy. But, okay, so you're playing... did this guy know he was playing a kid in this game? Did he just threaten... Well, he must have known because he knew what school to threaten him with. But why is this game so important? Are you losing actual money when you play it? It's a game you're playing on your phone? They've been playing Fortnite he's been playing Fortnite on Xbox One. And the two of them apparently have been introduced through other juveniles. I don't know how that works. And that's when the man lost. He then threatened the child through text messages and online voice messages.
Whoa.
Around 9 p.m. yesterday. Okay, I don't know. How did he get his phone number?
No, probably through the Xbox platform. I'm sure the kid's not handing out the phone number.
The man threatened to shoot the child, possibly at his school, police said in a news release. And the police chief said it kind of gives a new definition of sore loser. Yeah, it does. It does. The boundaries of jerkdom does keep getting broader and broader. So, oh, wow. The child's family reported the incident to the 4th Precinct, which is correct because that's the precinct they are in.
You realize these kids are going to be adults riding around in self-driving vehicles playing the same damn game.
Wow. Well, he was arrested around 1:40 a.m. Okay, so if he was arrested at 1:40 a.m., why do they need an increased police presence at the school, the intermediate school, unless they thought that he had a whole gang of people playing Fortnite that were going to go after this 11-year-old kid?
Yo, what kind of legend is this kid either?
Yeah, maybe he's a jerk when he wins. But you know what? That's the kind of thing. You can be a jerk when you win at Fortnite, and in another 30 years, 35 years, you can be a Supreme Court justice. I'm not going to hold that against you. So if you're listening, 11-year-old kid that is a jerk winning Fortnite, don't worry about it, you know. But if you're bullying people and assaulting people, that's going to be an issue. And someone's going to remember it. Somebody will speak up. Okay, they describe Fortnite as a cartoony third-person... I don't think I ever said that word before. Cartoony third-person shooter game. Okay, wait. First person is when you're...
Point of view, like in your eyes, looking first person.
Right.
Third person is kind of like a drone above you, I think.
Oh, so it's like the U.S. military.
Well, it's like... It's bird's eye. It's like you're observing the character walking.
Okay, and then you just blow them to smithereens.
No, you're watching them fight other players. Kind of like... fighting games of yesteryear, like with the older game systems.
Okay, so
like once you meet other characters, but
you're controlling them, right?
In this space, it's all 3D, and it's like, you know, thousands of other characters and other worlds, and it's all sort of mapped and stuff.
But why do you have to fight? Why can't you work together and build things and you know, recite poetry to each other?
Because that won't help the military crowdsource their AI.
The game is so popular in casual and professional settings that parents have hired tutors to train their kids and themselves on it.
Yeah.
I am not making that up. That is true. Tutors to play Fortnite. That is our country today. That is what we are doing.
Yeah.
You know, they have competitions. And, you know, I'm all for competitions of video games, but they have scholarships in schools, in colleges, scholarships for video game players. And this is what really gets me. They call them athletes. You know, how are they athletes?
Yeah, they're feature like carpal tunnel sufferers. I mean, it's not a... I think it should be like, yeah, they should have endowments and stuff like they do with humanities and other programs, but is it athletic? I mean, yeah, you know, you're pressing buttons. Music is, I guess, athletic, right? All the people that an instrument.
Look, it's not the same thing. I know what athletics are. I know what being an athlete is. I know I'm not one. In high school, we had the mathletes, but we knew that wasn't the same thing as being an athlete. It's just, I mean, define the terms. If you're good at something, you're good at something, but you're not something else. And being athletic means, you know, you're running around and sweating and you know, physical things. And while you might be pressing buttons on a keyboard, that's not really the physical kind of thing I'm talking about. I don't know what happened, but it's like I suddenly lost 10 minutes, and it's time for us to go. I'm sorry about that. We're out of time, but you can write to us, otw@2600.com, or you can listen next week to another exciting edition of Off the Wall. But what I really suggest you do now is keep your radio dial glued to 90.1 FM or 107.3 FM and listen to Finn's Revolution, which is coming up next. If you thought we have controversial material, you ain't seen nothing yet.
I'll be working on my personal trauma.
Yeah, you take a good look at yourself.
Yes.
And the rest of you, go to www.vote.org, register to vote, or check to see if you are registered to vote. Make a difference. Your voice counts. Good night.
Hey, kids, Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook until the 9 p.m. hour. In just a few moments, we're going to have the great Karen Hagloff on the air with us. She of a band of Susans and many other projects, and we're going to talk about her new one. So stay tuned. That's brand new from Karen Hagloff. We're going to be talking to her in just a few moments. Brand new EP, Palomino Steady Rocking. And, of course, Karen has been on the show before, Dr. Karen Hagloff. I'll call her that, I think, when I'm talking to her. But we'll see how that goes. So we're going to play another tune from her brand new EP, Palomino Steady Rocking. And then we're going to be talking to Karen on the air. So, yeah, this is brand new from Palomino Steady Rocking from Karen Hagloff. And hopefully, right after this tune, we shall have Karen on the air with us, speaking live. Snakebite 2 is the name of the tune, right here, WUSB Stony Brook.
Cowboy singer I once knew taught me this simple song. I'd like to play it now for you in hope to pass it on. Whoa, whoa, cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa, good horses are historical. Snakebite was part Mustang, quarter horse and Appaloos. Strong and serving, self-preserving, spirit of Cayuse. Cowhand Jack, young and brash, thought he knew it all. He won snakebite one stormy night on a lucky draw. Well, Jack bragged up his riding skills and womanizing too. Lindsay Lou, the rancher's daughter, did not approve. Had in mind to teach a lesson, came up with a dare. Challenged Jack on snakebite against her and her brown mare. Oh, the devil's call, when it takes all go! Cloud of dust, horizon, snakebite first, but riderless. Lindsay second, still astride, Jack limped up the neck. Crowd proclaiming Lindsay winner, Jack still in a daze. Lindsay took both horses and sent them off to graze. She said, whoa, whoa, cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa, good horses are historical. Cowboy singer I once knew sings no more today. Time and tide wait for no man, and Ray has passed away. Lindsay rides on snakebite now in the rodeo. Jack left town shortly after his disgraceful show. But Jack may have the last laugh as Lindsay, to be fair. Though she wouldn't give back snakebite, let Jack take her mare. And a year after the race, that brown mare dropped a foal with snakebite's face. Snakebite too, I count on you. Replay snakebite one. Replay snakebite one.